Dr. Rakesh Chandra, joining us this morning. First off, it's good to see you again.
Thank you. Same here, Tom.
You know, historically, when it comes to drugs, you can look back since the beginning of time, and man has sought altered states. Sometimes he's assigned religious significance to us. But more often than not, it's change. It's different. It's escape. It's relief. It's release. It's, what else? What are the words?
They make you feel happy.
There you go.
You feel good. All your problems don't matter for the time that you're high. So, of course, it's a wonderful thing. Back from the time of the Egyptians, when they first discovered opium, it's always been a problem. And the myth that you don't get addicted has always been around.
Right.
So only the bad people get addicted. Everyone else just enjoys it and moves on.
All right. And I mean, whether it's alcohol, I mean, or whatever the case, we have sought altered states as a human existence since the beginning of time. We really have. Probably at some point, once upon a time, somebody held their breath just to see what would happen. I mean, we kind of seek that. I think where humans are inherently kind of bored and always are looking for the edge. We're exploratory. We are curious.
We want to escape.
Animals, and we want that escape. You know, and Dr. Chandra has been treating opioid addiction, other addiction. He's a psychiatrist, is a treatment center in Carbondale. And after your last appearance with it here, Dr. Chandra, I received a number of phone calls. And oddly enough, I don't know if it's because it's my peer group makes up, but male fathers, father figures, fathers who have problems with kids. That was my number one phone call. Not somebody who's addicted, but somebody looking to get somebody to a treatment center. Now, how do you start that conversation in today's world without people saying, turn around, walking out the door?
It's a very difficult conversation, and we run into this problem all the time. People will call up, not just with drugs, but with any psychiatric problem and say, Mom is acting crazy. She's 70 years old. She's taking her clothes off and running through the house. What do we do? The myth is that you can't do anything. You can do something. You can call the police. You can call 911. And there is something called an emergency petition. You could go before a judge and say, Judge, my child, my son has major problems.
Well, let's say, Doc, does that, I mean, your son, child, are we talking, is there an age requirement for this? Have to be under 21 over?
You have to be over 21, but if you had someone younger also who was causing problems, you could call 911, and the least they would do is transport the child to the emergency room where someone would evaluate the child. What often happens is by the time they get there, they're doing fairly okay, and the criteria are very strict. Either you have to be a clear danger to yourself or others for them to do something.
But drug addicts, number one rule is protect your source.
Correct.
And one of the ways you protect your source is by not acting out and trying to stay below the radar.
Correct.
Because you don't want anything to interfere with the availability of drugs.
Correct.
And so as a result, we mask the behavior.
Yes.
We denial is a big thing. It just doesn't happen. It's not happening. No, you're wrong. And because there's that technique. You've got the ones who really lose it, you know, right at the dinner table and go berserk. We've got that. But there is a whole world of people who are driving down the highway, who are going to school, going to work, who are driving a semi today, and they're just staying below the radar.
Correct. And that's where the problem comes in. Because if you're taken to the emergency room, the doctor is just going to ask you a few questions. Are you okay? Are you trying to hurt yourself? No. Are you going to hurt somebody else? End of story. You're out of the door.
Right.
And that's where the frustration comes in. It is very difficult. You know, the old saying, it's like a cliche, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make the horse drink. It's the same thing here. You know your child has a problem. You've got clear evidence that things are spiraling downwards. But people can pull themselves together. And the minute they walk into a doctor and say, no, there's nothing wrong with me, I have no problems, you're out the door.
All right. Here's part of the problem, I guess, when it gets right down to it. We do kind of cover up, and we love our kids, so we don't want to do anything mean to them, and we kind of kid glove them a little bit. And they say, look, there's no problem. You know, I'm an adult. I can make my own choices.
I can control it,
right? You know, and you've got this whole scenario here that you work out, and you're watching them wither away in front of you.
Correct.
And they can say,
I just used a little bit. Oh, yeah, just with my friends, we do a little bit.
Do you subscribe to the theory that you have to hit the bottom to get help? Because there's two of us in the room and three that believe this.
Then. It's one of those myths that have perpetuated through
from
time.
From alcohol, I think.
Yes, that you have to hit rock bottom. You have to be ready for treatment, and that treatment can be
there's
at
the
any
magic
point.
Words, right? Yes. You have to be ready.
Yes.
How do you make somebody ready? Sorry, I put you in that position.
Well, here's the problem. People come to a doctor with a problem, and they think it's like an auto mechanic. The car is rattling. Fix it. It doesn't work that way in the addiction world. You have to be ready. It's a treatment that is a partnership between the medical and yourself and your therapist. It's not that you walk in, we give you a magic pill, it's all fixed. So you have to be ready. It's not something that's going to happen next week. It's a long haul, and you have to be prepared for that long haul.
All right. Now, when it came to meth addiction, when that started coming down the pipe, we kind of were accustomed to 30-day programs, especially when it came to alcohol. So we thought that template would fit on top of meth addiction. It didn't.
It did not.
And I've got numerous friends who, when I get out of prison, first thing I'm gonna get me a hit.
Yes.
Right? That'll be another 5 years. That's okay.
Yes.
I'm gonna get a hit when I get out of prison. That's exactly the terminology they use.
Yes.
Okay. So we have this template for addiction we've used for alcohol and meth. Does it fit on top of opioid and heroin addiction?
It does not. In fact, the myth of the 30 days is same as the 45-minute psychotherapy session that Freud used to do and it would cure everything.
Right.
There is no 45-minute. There is no 30 days.
I'm pretty messed up. 45 minutes isn't going to get me right.
Well, sometimes someone needs 4 weeks. Someone needs 10 weeks. It depends on the person. The program has to be tailor-made to that person. And that's where RASIC comes in. We tailor-make the program for you. But here's the other problem. Insurance pays for 30 days. Insurance doesn't pay for 60 days. It doesn't pay for 32 days.
And this is one of the things that interests me about your treatment program. There's two aspects. One, and you alluded to it, is why, which we want to get to in just a couple of moments. But you have attempted to make a treatment program which is incredibly affordable. And bang for it a little bit. You don't have to come into it. In searching help for people with meth, oftentimes when I called a facility for somebody who had asked me and I helped do the research, they said, we're full. Or they'd say, you don't have the insurance. Or they'd say, we'll need $10,000 up front. And that one, none of those were uncommon.
That happens all the time. But in fact, it doesn't have to be that way. Some people may come in 2 weeks, they're pretty ready to go. We want to treat people where the problem occurs. I don't want to take you out and put you somewhere for 30 days and then once your insurance is up, kick you out back into the same world. You have to fight the battle where it is. The battle doesn't come to you. You have to be there.
Isn't it interesting? Because I've got a friend of mine who got knee surgery and we're chatting and I'm like, you going to therapy? Well, do I need Bubba, there's probably nothing more important than the surgery itself is going to the aftercare, the therapy, to make sure you're back right and these people know what they're doing so that you're going to be better quicker.
Right.
And I think when it comes to addiction, that whole lift the hood, I change the air filter and you're good to go type of when it comes to your mind is, and quite frankly, do you want the rapid, lowest price person tinkering around with your head? But why? Now, we alluded to this earlier. But this is one of the things that you go on treatment is why is addiction in particular got such a strong hold on you? And usually there's an underlying case from something that happened to your child or maybe as a child. There's usually something there. And that's a big when I say something, that is, my goodness, an oversimplification.
One of the most important things that people forget is that you just can't give someone medication and treat them. For example, anyone who's qualified can write Suboxone or Subutex. But unless you take care of the underlying co-occurring psychiatric problem, you're not doing anything.
It's
just
a surrogate drug, isn't
correct,
it, Doc?
Correct. And people rightly say that, well, you're substituting a legal addiction with an illegal addiction. But unless you get to the core of the problem, why is the person taking drugs?
It's interesting. When I read this, when I was preparing for today's show and I started searching different terminology, how often what you just talked about showed up. This is what we're going to give you this, we're going to give you this, we're going to give you this. We're going to give you Suboxone, we're going to give you methadone. And that surrogacy is something that I see put, this is the way you do it with more pills.
Right. Right. Well, what are you treating? I mean, basically what you're saying is don't go to the drug dealer because it's illegal, but come to us once a month. I'll give you all the medicine you want. Just pop the pill and everything will go away. What about the social problem? What about the fact that you're living in a dysfunctional environment which you're not changing? What about the fact that you're hanging out with people who are not working, who are using drugs and encouraging you to do the same? What about the depression? What about the bipolar disorder? Unless you correct everything, unless you have a total recovery program, you're not going to get better. You're going to be patched up. But is that what you want, to just get patched up and keep moving in that dysfunctional circle? Or do you want to get well?
It never occurred to me until you just said that, and I was listening very closely to what you said. As I get older, I find my preoccupation with the term happy has grown.
Okay.
And I wonder that if maybe when we're doing treatment, the whole idea that you can live to be 74, 82 years old, and the vast majority of those years you're happy, especially new science indicates over 50.
Right.
That you can be living a pretty happy life. Like I said, loose Correct. Term there, right? So isn't the idea being, look, you're medicating yourself so you're happy, but you're stealing your own life. If we can get through this together, find out why you're depressed, hopefully treat bipolar if it's a chemical disorder, or whether some traumas occurred, get to the root of this, but ultimately imagine a life where you're happy, where you don't have to have a drug to be that way. I mean, isn't that really the gold ring on the backside of your treatment? And it never would have occurred to me, if I wasn't over 50, I wouldn't even thought that way, because when I was younger, it was about now.
Yes.
And I'm not going to live very long, so I might as well enjoy myself now.
Right, right. Happiness is a funny thing. You know, we look at happiness and say that it's a combination of five things. Your physical health and mental health, your relationships, the people you are with, some amount of money because it's necessary for life, some degree of spirituality or something, some belief, I'm not saying any
some
religion.
Some anchoring point. Yeah.
Some anchoring point, and a balance between all of these factors. So if you have those five things.
And an expectation of future happiness.
Correct. Something to look forward to, something to, you see, they say that you need three things in that aspect, that you need something to look forward to, someone to love or someone to love you, and good physical and mental health. If you have a combination of that, you're relatively happy.
Right.
But happiness is not a destination that, you know, you buy your ticket. In other words, you get a pill today, you pop it, and bingo, you're happy.
Right.
It's a very false sense of feeling good, and it's by altering your brain chemicals.
Well, it's not false if you keep doing it all day and the next day.
Yes, but,
day after,
but here's right? the problem. If the more you do it, the less it becomes, because you were talking about methamphetamine. The first hit, the first chase is unbelievable. And then after that, it's downhill all the way. You're always doing something which
chasing
is called chasing
the dragon
the
rest of your life.
Correct. You never get that same feeling again. So it's not exactly happiness, but certainly some form of pseudo-temporary happiness.
Right. And so that's the nicotine patch of happiness is
Correct.
Fentanyl, heroin, and in this case, opioids. But it's a lot more complicated than that. You know what I'm curious about? Is I don't seem to see a lot of, because when it comes to cocaine abuse, I see an overlap with alcohol.
Yes.
But it seems like opioids are a standalone addiction. I don't see much of a tie-in in my personal experience with alcohol and opioid abuse.
There is some, but there is not that much. There's more of a correlation between opioids and benzodiazepines. For some reason, people...
Bennies?
Yes. People use... because what happens is...
My goodness, you must be crawling... Well, I guess you get that relaxed roof while at the same time you're stimulated, so
yes.
you overcome the downer aspect while you're over happy and go out and do stuff.
Yes.
Oy.
You're wired, basically.
Right. All the time. And I'm kind of curious here to see if we've got any questions come in, because my phone's been coming on. But you know what's interesting about this, Doc? Addiction is an interesting thing. A woman comes to me. I'm working out at a location on live remote. She says, you know, my brother always likes you. He respects you. Would you do me a favor? Would you go speak to him?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to die. He's doing meth. So I track him down. I'm pretty disturbed when I get there. There's a number of people there. They're cooking meth. They're smoking meth. I can't find the guy I'm looking for. But I do find his horse, who's been tied up behind the house with a saddle on it for 3 days.
Oh my God.
So take care of the horse, get the horse some water, get the saddle off of it, get it fed. And I find him on the property, And he doesn't want to come and talk to me because he thinks I'm a cop, even though we've known each other since like we're 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, and we talk about meth and, you know, right. I'm no stranger. I didn't fall off the cabbage wagon yesterday.
Right.
And he looks at me and says, I love meth. It got me off crack.
Really?
At least now I'm not sitting in the bathroom floor for 7 hours looking out the window. Now I'm doing meth and I'm going around doing what I want to do.
Here's the other problem. You see, we come back to the psychiatric issues. A lot of people do have ADHD in varying degrees. I would say that a lot more than we diagnose. The reason is that it's not an all or nothing phenomena. So when you take meth, there are a whole bunch of people who get high and wired and so on. But there is a fair number of people who feel very calm because, you see, it's a methamphetamine, and it's like a lock and key mechanism that if you have ADHD, even in minor degrees, you do feel better. You can concentrate. You can do something. So it ties in again with the psychiatric problems. Why do people do drugs? And the bottom line again is that they feel good. They feel happy. They feel relaxed.
You know, and it's kind of interesting you've seen somebody in your position be dishonest about it. Because it makes you happy. That's why.
Right.
And cut all that horse hockey away from that. All that other stuff, because it makes you feel good. That ultimately, we are an organism that seeks pleasure.
Correct. And the problem is that life is stressful today. No matter where you are or at what level, we look at each other and say, oh, he must have an easy life and everything's wonderful. It's not. At every level of your life, every stage of your life, you have anxiety and stress. When you deal with the anxiety and stress and you successfully overcome the problem, you feel pleasure. But it's not easy. On the other hand, you pop a pill, you feel good. And that's what it's all about.
And we are really about easy fixes. Because it's interesting because your easy fix, come in and fix me, I'm addicted, comes from I fixed myself because it was easy.
Correct.
You know, I wonder when we look at the mental health of this country and the shootings in schools and the other clearly obvious mental issues that come about. I mean, there's some pretty extreme, weird, bizarre behavior on a regular basis. That this is one of the measuring sticks that indicate a larger problem, don't you think?
I think that all
that we're a lot of unhappy people.
Yes,
I guess,
there are a lot of
summation.
Unhappy people, but let's be honest, Tom. America is the best place to be in the world. Why do people jump on a log and try to float across a river or take a rickety boat to try and get here and drown? There's a lot of opportunity. It's a wonderful country. There are problems, but life is not possible. The only people who are stress-free in this world are in a graveyard, which you used to walk past and said, these are the only people who have no stress. Stress is a part of life. Stress, if you didn't have some stress in your life, you'd be lying in bed all day vegetating. There are people who don't need to work. There are people who don't need to do anything. You'd think that, oh, they're having a blast. Actually, they're very bored and unhappy too. So the thing is that life is full of problems. But the answer is not to cop out by taking a chemical.
It's so easy.
I know, but easy isn't always good.
You've had this conversation, haven't you?
Easy is not always good. What happens is it's a short-term fix. It's a quick fix. But the thing is, it damages more than you imagine. It damages your brain chemistry, and that's where the problem comes in.
I want to ask you a question on behalf of some listener right now who I know is listening. And I don't know their name, but I know they're listening, and they want to say, look, I heard what you said on the radio today. Do you mind if I call you and get more information? Because I'm afraid that if I talk to my son, I talk to my daughter, I talk to my husband, I talk to my wife, that they're going to walk away and I'm never going to get a chance to see them again. They're going to love the drug more than me. I've seen this happen.
Yes.
I love crack more than I love my husband. I'm gone and I'm living with my crack dealer.
Correct.
All right. And they want more information and want to talk to you because I've had a number of people ask me specifically about you because you seem to be understanding and without that law enforcement, militant, we're going to lock you up type of mentality.
Correct.
Which they're afraid of. They love their families. They want the best for them. So can they call you? Is there a way that a family member, do you have a class, open hours where somebody come in and say, this is my problem, this is what I'm seeing. How do I best go about this? Because I assume you're one of these guys too, just knowing what little I do. I don't do anything without a plan.
Correct. So there are multiple ways we can be contacted. One is we have a wonderful website. It's www.rasic.net. So that is Yes. Yeah. And we will talk to you. The other thing is that our phone number, 618-490-1045, you're always welcome. See, here's another thing that people don't realize. It's very difficult, even when you've got your courage up and everything, to walk in to a doctor's office. We select our staff very carefully. They're the most sympathetic, kind staff that you can imagine. We have coffee.
You're already scared, man. You don't want to be more scared when you walk in.
Yes, we have coffee. We have snacks. Come in, and you don't have to come and see me. Come in and talk to the staff. Hang out in the clinic. We made it in a way that you can come and hang out, see what's going on. Because the fear of the unknown is also, you've got your courage up. You want to get treatment, but you know something? You walk into a clinic, and they look at you funny, and they say, hey, here's another druggie.
And inside you, when you're looking out and going through this, you think, they think I'm a bad person.
Yes. So you walk into our clinic, we invite you, come and see what it's all about. It's an illness. If you have diabetes, if you have hypertension, would you want to be treated that way? It's the same thing with this. You're not a bad person. You're not a criminal. You have an illness. And you should walk into a very sympathetic, kind, and friendly place. And that's what we have gone to great pains to make our office. You can come and hang out, talk to the staff, get information. The other thing is the psychotherapist we've selected. You know, this guy, I won't name him, but he spent 20, 30 years as the worst drug user that you can imagine. Hit absolutely skid row bottom, lived on the streets, did everything, pulled himself out. He got a bachelor's, got a master's. When he says, when I say that this is a problem, I'm talking as a doctor. When this guy says this is the problem, he's talking from experience. So we've selected our staff very carefully so that when you talk to them, you're not getting some theoretical mumbo jumbo. You're getting the real stuff. Someone's living with a son, someone's living with a boyfriend, someone themselves had problems. They've been there. And you know, unless you've really been there, no matter how much theoretical knowledge I have, you cannot really feel the pain.
Yeah. Empathy comes from, I think, being in the same spot.
Correct.
You can have a perspective, but empathy comes from having actually been in the same shoes.
Correct.
You know, what's interesting about this phone number, this hotline has been introduced, and they say it just started getting popped. The minute that that came online, this 800 opioid addiction hotline, they have really...
Yes. Yes. That is the first step. Find out what it is. Our office, you're always welcome. You don't have to be our patient. If we can't treat you, we will find the right place for you. But
I know Dr. Jeff Ripita is also doing this treatment as well.
He's doing the treatment.
He and his partner.
Dr. Newcomb is doing the treatment. There are some excellent doctors out there who are really committed. But again, there's another problem. We are limited by the numbers. You know, the federal government limits the number of people you can see.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, there's a ceiling of 100 patients that you can see. In special cases, they'll give you permission to go to 275. But you're limited by the numbers. So the problem is sometimes that the doctor is
There's a lot more addicted people than there are treaters then.
Correct. Oh, my God. That is the biggest problem. But despite that, there are places available depending on your situation, depending on where you live, depending on your insurance. And you don't have to come and be our patient, but come and talk to us. We'll advise you. We'll be happy to talk to you. The staff will be happy to talk to you. If you're a good fit for us, because see, to be a good fit for us, you really have to be willing to get treated and get better. And we expect you to do certain things. We want you to reunite with your family.
You've got to participate.
You've got to participate. You've got to get a job if you don't have one. You've got to be seen for therapy. And you have to comply with our medication
regimen.
But if you do that, we're a very personalized treatment system because we want you working. We want you back with the family. We don't want you coming in, getting your medicine and not working because work provides structure. It provides some degree of security.
A sense of purpose.
Correct.
My job has saved my life more than once.
Correct.
I'm almost positive.